WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? Happy, happy Thursday. That's right, it is December 3rd, 2015, and you are now locked into WKAR's Current Sports. As always, I am your host, Al Martin. We've got a fantastic show in store for you all. And hey, folks, it is our final live show for the week, seeing as though I will be traveling to Indianapolis, Indiana, tomorrow morning, getting you ready for the Michigan State and Iowa Big Ten Championship game. Tomorrow we'll be rolling in a best of Current Sports special. You still don't want to miss that. But hey, seeing as though we will be out of the office tomorrow and on the road, we will be giving you a preview of the Michigan State and Iowa game on today's show. We'll also have Throwback Thursday for you. Also bring you a pretty cool feature that centers around the Michigan State Club Dodgeball team. That's right, Current Sports beat reporter Kelly Van Maley. She has been following the team throughout the season, and she is going to highlight two individuals who are actually co-captains of the squad, and they're pretty good, to say the least. We'll also break down what took place last night at the Breslin Center, the Michigan State men's basketball team getting a dub over number 24, Louisville. That's right, Rick Pitino's squad, and it wasn't easy. It wasn't easy whatsoever. Louisville was actually in command of that game throughout most of its play, but Michigan State storms back for the come-from-behind win. All of that and so much more. We'll be taking your calls. Call in 517-355-9527. We'll also be giving away a pair of tickets to tonight's Michigan State women's basketball game as they also take on Louisville in the Big Ten ACC Challenge. But you know what's next. Here are your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners for this December 3rd. All right, folks, we start with the MSU hoop team. Denzel Valentine dominated when number 3 Michigan State needed its senior star to deliver. Valentine scored 11 of his 25 points in the final 5 minutes and 6 seconds, including a tie-breaking three-pointer and all 6 of his free throws in the final minute to help the Spartans seal a 71-67 comeback win over number 24 Louisville on Wednesday night in the ACC Big Ten Challenge. The Spartans, who are now 8-0, they trailed by as much as 13 in the first half and didn't take their lead until there was 6:47 left on the clock. Up next, Michigan State plays Binghamton at home this Saturday, and I'm told by inside sources that after they play Binghamton this Saturday, they will be catching a flight to catch that Michigan State and Iowa Big Ten Championship football game. Pretty cool stuff. All right, with his team trailing number 1 ranked Schoolcraft 74-72, with seconds remaining in regulation, Jimmy Codette, he cleaned up a Javon Haynes missed layup to force overtime. And from there, the 5th-ranked Lansing Community College Stars handled business. LCC outscored the previously beaten Schoolcraft Oselets 16-6 in the extra period to grab a 90-80 victory at Gannon's Gymnasium on Wednesday night. Pretty cool win for the LCC men's basketball team. Number 19/20 Michigan State women's basketball, they will take on Louisville tonight in the Big Ten ACC Challenge. That game can be seen on ESPN2. One day after the men's teams meet, the women will be featured with the tip-off set for 7 p.m. Now, Michigan State returns home after 2 games in the Bahamas. That must have been lovely. Going 1-1 in the Junkanoo Jam. Now, after being named to the Junkanoo Jam All-Tournament Team, junior guard Tori Jankowska, she was named to the Big Ten Honor Roll this week. Congrats to Tori. Well-deserved. The Michigan football program is just 4 days removed from the end of its regular season, and it already has lost a major piece of its coaching staff. U of M defensive coordinator DJ Durkin was named Maryland's new head coach. The news was first reported by Sports Illustrated. A Michigan official declined to comment following the initial report. Michigan has a policy of allowing other institutions to announce their personnel moves. Former Georgia coach Mark Richt on Wednesday agreed to become Miami's new coach, and the deal was expected to be announced by the end of the week, according to sources with knowledge of the situation. Now, Rick, a former Miami quarterback, agreed to return to his alma mater only 3 days after he was fired at Georgia, where he guided the Bulldogs to a 145-51 record and two SEC championships in 15 seasons. Georgia athletic director Greg McGarrity, he fired Rich on Sunday after Georgia went 9-3 on the year. The Detroit Pistons, they rallied from a 16-point deficit in the fourth quarter to beat the Phoenix Suns 127-122 in overtime. Reggie Jackson scored 24 of his 34 points after the half, helping the Pistons cut into the big deficit. The Pistons trailed 98-82 with 9:22 left in the fourth, but outscored Phoenix 30-14 down the stretch to force the overtime period. The Pistons, they will now host the Milwaukee Bucks this Friday. The Detroit Lions, they will play host to the Green Bay Packers. The Lions are 4-7 on the year, while the Green Bay Packers are 7-4. That will take place tonight on Thursday Night Football. The Green Bay Packers have lost four of their last five games. Meanwhile, in Detroit, the Lions suddenly find themselves in the midst of a three-game winning streak. That streak, which began against these same very Packers on November 15th, kicked off after the Lions dumped and battled offensive coordinator Joe Lombardi. And last but not least, the Detroit Red Wings. They will play host to the Arizona Coyotes tonight on Fox Sports Detroit. The Wings and Coyotes split two games last year. Well, those are your current sports quick hit headliners. Our phone lines are open. Call in to be a part of the show. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports or even tweet me at @AlMartinWKAR. So much to get to with so little time. It's about that time to start the show.
Show today where they said Stanford would get in. I can't believe that. Valentine lob, Davis. Timeout Louisville. Drive by the big scorer of the half. The pitch to the diving Mahmoud. Could not finish. Costello's got 5 seconds. Valentine. Oh, how did it go in? Good night. How did that go in?
Welcome to the show, ladies and gents, boys and girls. So glad you have allowed Current Sports to be a part of your Thursday afternoon. I'm excited. I mean, I feel like my excitement has been building as the week goes on here on the show. Seeing as though, again, we are a day closer to the Michigan State and Iowa Big Ten Championship game, which will, of course, will be held out in Indianapolis, Indiana this Saturday. Kickoff is set for 8:17 p.m. And before we even, you know, get to that game, I mean, how about the Big Ten ACC Challenge? Some entertaining games throughout the week and concerning our local team here, Michigan State, the men's basketball team last night. They got the dub over Louisville. It wasn't easy, though, as I stated to start the show. It was not easy whatsoever. But they did pull it out, folks. Denzel Valentine, he dominated when the Spartans needed him to. He was a bit inconsistent to start that game. He scored 11 of his 25 points in the final 5 minutes, including a tie-breaking three-pointer and all six of his free throws in the final minute. Just ice water in his veins to drill those free throws, and it helped the Spartans seal a 71-67 comeback win over Rick Pitino's team. Folks, our phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. You know, an interesting matchup last night, because when first watching that game, Michigan State did not look in sync whatsoever. They actually started 0-8 from the field. 0-8 from the field to start that game, folks. And I tell you what, you got to give a lot of credit to this Louisville team, which faced its first true test of the year last night here in East Lansing. But Rick Pitino has something special with that squad. He truly does, because defensively, Louisville was able to just frustrate the Spartans. And I took a few notes as I was watching that game, and I noticed that Louisville and, you know, Dan Dockage and Mike Tirico, they did a great job of pointing this out last night. But Louisville, they started to run a sort of a matchup zone to throw Michigan State off. And they even, you know, when realizing the tear that Denzel Valentine has been on to start this season, they even ran a box and one multiple times throughout that first half that I noticed to slow down Denzel Valentine. And basically what that means, to not get too technical with you guys, but when it comes to a box and one, you have four players that sit in the zone while one man is playing man-to-man defense on one player, and that one player was Denzel Valentine. And it was frustrating Denzel Valentine to start the game. And, man, I mean, and then one play, another play that stood out, you know, when looking at Michigan State offensively, and just to show how out of sync they were, I mean, how about the out-of-bounds play in which Louisville, they actually show full-court pressure. It was a full-court press. Denzel Valentine is taking the ball out of bounds. And just a routine out-of-bounds play. I mean, hey, you're gonna see a full-court press throughout the season. So you'd think Michigan State would know how to handle it, right? But Lewerall Stumptum Nearing Jr., he comes on a cut and actually runs away from the basketball. You know, you have 5 seconds to get the ball in bounds, and Denzel Valentine realizing that, hey, it's about to hit 5 seconds here. I need to throw this thing in bounds. It leads to a turnover and an easy Louisville basket on a routine out-of-bounds play for the Spartans. Just totally out of sync. They couldn't finish at the rim in transition. They couldn't finish at the rim in a half-court set. And much props to Trey Lewis and number 11. 11 points for Trey Lewis, I should say. And Damian Lee, who had 9 points. So 11 points for Trey Lewis at the half, and Damian Lee with 9 points at the half. And also Damian Lee, you talk about those turnovers. Damian Lee did one incredible job defensively. He had 4 steals at the half. Michigan State had the turnover bug without a doubt. And Izzo, you know, watching his halftime interview before he walked into the locker room, he was not happy at all with how his guards defended that half. Michigan State, there's no question that Michigan State can certainly shoot the ball. They have a lot of guys that can drill it from deep, including Bryn Forbes, who was 5 of 9 last night from the three-point line, and also Denzel Valentine. He was a bit off, but, you know, he was able to knock down 3 out of 8 out of 8 three-pointers. Overall, Michigan State was 9 of 23 from the three-point line. And, you know, we really didn't see Michigan State start to hit from outside until the second half. And for me, and I think for a lot of people who watched that game last night, you have to give the Player of the Game Award to Mr. Kenny Goins, the redshirt freshie walk-on who was just so active last night for Kenny Goins. Without him, Michigan State would have clearly lost that game. I mean, folks, he had 13 rebounds, 10 rebounds on the defensive end. He was 2 for 2 from the field, and that baby jumper that actually came at a crucial point in the game, and I think actually tied the game or actually propelled Michigan State to the lead. I think it gave Michigan State the lead, their first lead all game. So he was just huge, folks. He finished with 5 points, but man, oh, man, were they a big 5 points. And, you know, Tom Izzo always brings up, though, how their guards, and going back to the shooting, I mean, Michigan State certainly has a lot of guards that can drill it from deep. You know, Matt McQuaid, Bryn Forbes, Denzel Valentine, they have a lot of guys that can struggle from deep. But Izzo has always complained that his guards, seeing as though they shoot very well, usually shooters don't defend. And that was a problem because they allowed Trey Lewis to get loose. They allowed Damian Lee to get loose. And how about Damian Lee and Trey Lewis, though? They seem to be in sync. Anytime the Michigan State got close in that game, specifically at the very beginning of the second half, where, you know, Michigan State started to storm back and go on a run. And whenever Michigan State would tie the game, it seemed like Trey Lewis or Damian Lee would hit a big three-pointer to you know, give Louisville a bit more cushion throughout that game. But those two are going to get better as the year moves on. But I was very impressed with that tandem of Lewis and Lee because, wow, did they frustrate Michigan State or what? And there was even a point which I tweeted out. I mean, Dan Dockett, he actually said that Denzel Valentine cannot guard Damian Lee. That's exactly what he said and exactly how he said it. And Denzel Valentine was clearly frustrated because Damian Lee was making plays left and right for that team. Just unbelievable. But then what happens? Denzel Valentine showing his leadership once again. Denzel Valentine showing why right now he is the leader. And again, it's still very early. We are still in the infancy of the men's college basketball year. So I don't want to blow this out of proportion. But Denzel Valentine showing why he is the leading candidate now for the National Player of the Year award. Denzel Valentine just takes over. He just completely takes over the game. He finds a groove. He starts to hit down big shots, whether it be in the paint with that nice floater he has going now that he's added to his game, or whether it be big three-pointers when his team needs it, or what I think is the most valuable part of Denzel's game, the ability to get his teammates involved. He started to find guys who are open down low in the paint, more specifically Deontay Davis. You heard our intro for the show. He found Deontay Davis on multiple times down low in the paint, unguarded for alley-oops. Denzel Valentine just took over and said, you know what? This is when we go on a run. This is when we show our toughness, because Louisville certainly showed theirs early on and throughout much of that game last night. He was able to find a groove. And the chemistry, you know, we always talked about when Bryn Forbes, Lansing Sexton grad, of course, he played with Denzel Valentine under the tutelage of course, Denzel's dad, Carlton Valentine at Lansing Sexton. They were able to win, you know, a couple state championships while they were both there. And when Bryn Forbes announced that he will be making his return to the Lansing area from Cleveland State and will be transferring to play for Tom Izzo and the MSU men's basketball team, the question on everyone's mind was when will we really start to see the chemistry between Forbes and Valentine, the same chemistry that we saw when these two played back in high school. And these two go back like four flats on a Cadillac, okay? I mean, they grew up with each other. I mean, they know each other's game. But I've always said to myself, when will we really start to see that peak happen between the chemistry between Valentine and Forbes? And we're starting to see it right now, early on in the season. I mean, Valentine, how many times did Valentine find Forbes for that corner three? And Bryn Forbes just nailed it down like it was routine, like it was absolutely nothing. We saw that start to happen, and Louisville really had no answer for it. They hung in that game because of their outstanding players and that outstanding Louisville defense that frustrated Michigan State. But in the end, Michigan State and Denzel Valentine, I mean, they were able to just take over that game down the stretch. And how about Matt Costello? Matt Costello developing, you know, those post moves down low. He was able to hit a big shot down low. Deontay Davis, I talked about how assertive he was. Kenny Goins, again, he gets my player of the game honors because he did not allow Louisville to get second chances on the boards. Whenever there was a loose ball after a Louisville miss, Kenny Goins was there to clean it up. And the reason why Kenny Goins was in the game in the first place, and he ended up being the real hero other than Valentine down the stretch, is because Louisville has a lot of size and the fact that, of course, Gavin Schilling is still hurt. He's still dealing with that turf toe. So that's really the only reason we saw Kenny Goins, you know, able to acquire a lot of minutes last night, but he did a lot with the minutes he was given. And then I also want to bring up this aspect of things because there's a lot to take in with a game like this. But Lou Rawls, Tum Tum Naren Jr. Man, I don't know about you, but for me, it's frustrating watching Tum Tum play because, one, you hear about, you know, how Tum is a fantastic leader, and I'm not taking that away from Tum. He is a vocal leader. He's a guy who this team rallies around. We hear it all the time. And when Tum was, you know, became a Spartan, you know, that's all you heard. I mean, he's young, but people love playing with him because he's a guy who's going to get in you and inspire you and lead you. Heck, Draymond Green, when he first met Lou Rawls Tum Nearing Jr., Draymond Green compared Tum to himself as a leader. Mateen Cleaves, same thing with Mateen Cleaves. When he first met Lou Rawls Tum Nearing Jr., he said that Tum reminds me of myself back in 2000 when I was a leader for this team. But, man, it's just so frustrating watching Tum because, you know, we hear about the leadership. We hear about how much he's worked on his game in the offseason. I mean, Tom Izzo praised Tum for being a gym rat and working on that jump shot, which he so desperately needed to because, in many regards, last year, especially during that NCAA tourney run, whenever Tum was out on the floor, it was like offensively Michigan State was going against their opponent 4-on-5. That's how it felt because Tum just couldn't nail down the mid-range jumper and really had not an affluent offensive game. At halftime, I tweeted out, quote, still have yet to see Tum find his offensive game this season. He's 0-of-3 on the night thus far. And then Graham Couch of the Lansing State Journal, he tweeted me back. He retweeted it and tweeted me back. MSU might need to sit Tum down until his foot heals. And that's a good point because a lot of people don't realize that Tum is battling an injury. That Tum being the guy that he is and being the leader that he is for this team, he's not going to come out and say, yeah, my foot's bothering me, I'm hurt. He's not going to provide any excuse as to why he's in a drought. But it is bothering Tum. But as soon as I tweet that, what happens in the second half? You know, and this just goes to show how Tum is such a guy who looks at the glasses half full rather than half empty and is still going to give his heart out there on the basketball court. Tum said, you know what? I may not be having a good shooting night. He actually finished the night 0-of-5, had no points whatsoever, had one rebound, had two assists, but he makes two big plays that will not show up in your usual stat sheet. And what I mean by that is Tum had two big defensive plays down the stretch of that game. One play where Louisville is trying to chip back into the game, and what does Tum do? He steals it. I believe he ripped the ball right out of Trey Lewis's hands. Now, unbelievable stuff. And then on a fast break, Tum stands in there in the paint and takes a charge on Louisville as they're driving down the court for a fast break opportunity. Those two plays came at crucial moments of the game, and Tum stood up and said, you know what? I may not score this game, but you better believe I'm going to have an imprint on this Michigan State rally. And I want to give a lot of credit to Tum for sticking in there and not getting discouraged and impacting the game on the defensive end, which was huge. So overall, I more so think that we learn, you know, more about Louisville in this game than Michigan State. We've seen Michigan State beat Kansas. Heck, they're coming off a win out in California, winning the Wooden Legacy Championship Tournament. We know Michigan State is a solid team, and they have weapons, and they're very, very deep. But again, this is really the first test for Rick Pitino and the Louisville Cardinal team playing the number 3 team in the nation. And Louisville, you know, I think that they proved that they can run with the big dogs. I mean, this is a team that lost a lot from last year's NCAA squad that, of course, played Michigan State. And, you know, Michigan State, you know, they beat Louisville to eventually go on to the Final Four. But they lost a lot from last year's team. But Rick Pitino's squad showed that they are going to be very good. Trey Lewis, Damian Lee, they're going to be very good. Chinua Onuku, he was also fantastic for this team, especially defensively for him. Anas Mahmood, I mean, they have a lot of size and a lot of playmakers for that team, and they showed that they can hang with the big dogs, and eventually I think Louisville is going to get better as the year goes on. So Pitino, at the end of the day, should be smiling, without a doubt. But it was a fun game last night. Folks, call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. I want to invite right now our fantastic engineer of WKAR's Current Sports, Isaac Constance. Isaac, how you doing, my man?
Doing well. I was sitting there last night with my jaw on the floor because Denzel Valentine has a weakness. Oh, my goodness. You would never know it the way he's playing. But like you mentioned earlier, Damian Lee really tore into him a little bit, especially during that first half. Damian Lee, first off, might not be a big name. That's because he played at Drexel for the past three seasons. But last year, he was one of the nation's leading scorers. Number four. And he absolutely showed why he can play with the big dogs now. But what we're seeing from Michigan State is really an unprecedented contribution from just about everybody. Denzel Valentine is the clear, unchallenged leader for this team. He played 39 minutes last night. He missed 1 minute of on-court action. The guy is a battler. He's a warrior. And he certainly showed that last night. Like you said, he started off really slowly, but he was able to find other ways to do it. That meant not taking the ball all the time up the court. That meant playing a little more off ball, making some backdoor cuts, contributing on the glass a lot of the times. You saw when Deontay Davis missed a tip in, Denzel Valentine right there to tip that missed attempt right back in. So Denzel Valentine just finding ways to get it done, and that's the total Tom Izzo mentality. And that's why I want to touch upon more than anything else, the Tom Izzo effect. Now, Rick Pitino is a fantastic coach. No shame on him whatsoever. In fact, that defensive strategy that he came out with was brilliant. The Spartans were down 13 points just, what, maybe 5 minutes into the game. But Tom Izzo, in-game adjustments, being able to make it through that press, because the Spartans, this was not a good game for them ball control-wise. We saw Matt McQuaid, the freshman, really struggle with that press, really struggle with the defensive attention that Louisville gave him. Same with Denzel Valentine. For the first time this year, the turnover problems returned. And the Spartans as a whole, I think, had 19 turnovers on the game. It was not, or 17, excuse me. It wasn't always a pretty performance from them. Mm-hmm. But that was just a way to grind through that, just getting through those first 5 minutes. And the Spartans showed up. It's how you finish. It's not how you start.
Yeah, without a doubt. And I think, and speaking of Matt McQuaid, I mean, he was very silent last night. He actually had no points. He was 0-0, played 11 minutes last night. And let's be real here. I mean, you know, Denzel Valentine, he had a quiet game for the most part. We really didn't start to see Denzel Valentine emerge until late in that game when his team needed him to, when he was forced to. He had a quiet game. Now, again, he was 7-for-16, 3-of-8 from the three-point line, 8-for-8. From the free throw line, which was big.
6 of 6 late, too.
Yeah, exactly. 6 of 6 late. He finished with 25 points, 5 rebounds, and 7 assists. And, you know, you think about a quiet game for Denzel Valentine. We look at 25, 5, and 7. That's not really quiet, but it's quiet for Denzel Valentine because, again, he was frustrated. It was not like he had a great shooting night. And again, let's be real here. When you mention Damian Lee, I mean, Damian Lee is one of the premier scorers in the nation. Denzel Valentine is not going to see a Damian Lee every single night. He's not going to be challenged like that every night. But again, when the competition, you know, reveals itself like a Lee, you got to step up to the challenge. And I think Denzel Valentine can certainly improve defensively. Heck, I think this entire team has room to improve defensively. And I totally agree with Tom Izzo at the half when he talked about how his team just played a poor defensive game in that first half. And you mentioned the Izzo effect. I actually also took note how Izzo, at the very beginning of that game, man, and he does this every game, but I saw it more so last night. You know, there's levels to Izzo's tantrums, you know, on a game-to-game basis. And I felt as though Izzo's, you know, I guess you can say emotion on the sideline towards the referees was a bit more ramped up, seeing as though I thought that Izzo was a bit upset on how the referees didn't allow Michigan State to be too physical, or both sides of the floor. I mean, Louisville not to be too physical with Michigan State and vice versa. And Izzo took – he didn't like that. And we saw Izzo at one point, he was very, very close to getting a technical foul. But the referee turns around, I think it was more so from a respect standpoint, he turns around and says, hey, Tom, calm down. Let it play out. I don't want to tee you up here. And it seemed as though from there, I felt as though the referees – they let Louisville and Michigan State play a bit more. And anytime you play a physical game, we all know how Michigan State likes to play on the basketball court. We know what the identity of a Tom Izzo team is going to be. They are going to be physical, and they are going to be tough. You don't want to get into a boxing match against the Spartans because you will lose every time. And I think that was also a turning point in the game.
It was. And what we saw, too, is a lot of that walk-on mentality all across the Spartan gym. You saw Aaron Harris, too. Might not have had a great game, just 1 of 5 shooting 5 points, but he had a big three in the corner when Louisville was maybe starting to counteract that Spartan run off an assist from Denzel Valentine nonetheless. But you saw everybody, of course, specifically Kenny Goins. I mean, they just pulled it together, found a way. Those were gritty points, gritty rebounds. Those weren't anything clean about it. Also, Bryn Forbes, he came out in the second half and made the difference. Back-to-back threes on a few occasions, and he was just such a difference maker.
He's got to play better defense, though.
He does.
Again, Bryn Forbes, I watched him very closely last night. There are times when Bryn Forbes will take plays off defensively. And I think Tom Izzo has a point. Usually when you have a great shooters are not known for being fantastic defenders. There are very few Steph Currys in this world.
Oh, Steph Curry even isn't a fantastic defender.
I think he's not a fan. But Steph Curry defends the basketball, though. I mean, there's a reason why Steph Curry is among the league leaders right now when it comes to steals, Isaac. Steph Curry plays defense as a guard. There's very few defenders like Steph Curry who can shoot the basketball and can impact the game on the other side as well on the defensive end. I watched Denzel Valentine and Bryn Forbes very closely last night, and I just saw some lazy defense at times.
There was.
Very lazy defense. So let's hit our first break, though. Again, when we come back, we'll actually be playing you a pretty cool feature from Current Sports beat reporter Kelly Van Maley as she profiles the MSU dodgeball team. That's right. You don't want to miss that. We'll also give you a preview of the Michigan State and Iowa Big Ten championship game this Saturday, seeing as though we'll be out of town covering the hoopla this Friday. You don't want to miss any of that. Again, phone lines are open 517-355-9527. Don't touch that dial. You are listening to Current Sports. All right, folks, we do have some breaking news for you here. I'm just seeing here on ESPN.com that the NCAA has denied the Syracuse Orange and coach Jim Boeheim's appeal to eliminate his 9-game suspension for NCAA infractions, but it agreed to move the ban to the non-conference season. Now, the Hall of Fame coach will begin serving the suspension effective at midnight tonight before the Orange's game Saturday against rival Georgetown. Boeheim told ESPN that in his appeal, which he had cited other similar cases, such that of SMU coach Larry Brown, and asked to serve his suspension before the ACC season started. Boeheim, however, was less than pleased with the short notice, saying he was all alerted of the change after the Orange's game against Wisconsin on Wednesday night, and he said he didn't have time to meet with his team before the NCAA released its statement about the changes. So, yeah, you know, interesting. When you talk about, you know, sanctions and NCAA infractions and teams who have gone against the grain in this very conversation. Last night, we saw a direct view of that with Rick Pitino and the Louisville Cardinal. I mean, we've been documenting over the past few weeks here and months here on Current Sports the story that actually broke back in October on how an escort had accused the Louisville men's basketball team of course, hiring her to lure in recruits for the Louisville men's basketball team by hiring her along with some of her other escort friends in which she was in charge of. And, you know, they would meet at a dorm hall and they would provide dances. And she's even saying sexual acts went down in order to lure recruits. Now, Rick Pitino has gone on record to say, I had no knowledge of this. I had no idea it was going on. It's an absolute travesty. And he's gone on the record to say that. But who knows what's going to happen with that story as the investigation unfolds. But again, breaking news here. The NCAA has denied the Syracuse Orange and Coach Jim Boeheim's appeal to eliminate his 9-game suspension for NCAA infractions. So, yeah, there you have that. Folks, our phone lines are open 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. And before moving forward, we did have an interesting conversation here this week on Current Sports concerning, of all things, Rocky. Yeah, Rocky Balboa, folks, who I think is the most famed figure in sports cinematic history. One of my favorite sports movie franchises. I brought this up because I went and saw Creed over the weekend, which is a spinoff from the Rocky franchise, and it was absolutely fantastic. Michael B. Jordan and Stallone, of course, Michael B. Jordan playing Adonis Creed, Apollo Creed's son, who goes on to, you know, get his feet wet in boxing, and, you know, Stallone plays Michael B. Jordan, Michael B. Jordan's trainer, Adonis Creed's trainer in the movie, and it was absolutely fantastic. But we got into a discussion about whether or not I was wrong, because on Monday, and going back and listening to it, I misspoke at the beginning, but I did correct myself. But we had a caller yesterday that called me out and said that I got it wrong as to, I believe he asked Isaac which movie did Apollo Creed die in or
correct,
something like that?
Yes. Jim said, from Corona.
Jim, yep. From Corona called me out and said I got that wrong. So let's go back. Let's review the tape, shall we? And, you know, I wanted to go check out Creed. I'm a big Rocky fan, huge Rocky fan, actually. I've watched every single Rocky like at least 50 times, okay? So when I found out that Creed was coming out, which is a spinoff from the Rocky series, of course, Apollo Creed, who died in, what, Rocky III, if you haven't seen Rocky, which, first off, shame on you, but if I spoiled that, I'm sorry. But Apollo Creed, he's one of Rocky's opponents in the series, and he dies. He's a beloved character, though, throughout the series, and they decided to do a spinoff in which they introduce Creed's son, Apollo Creed's son, Adonis Creed.
I'm not 100% sure I got the right movie. Is it Rocky III that Mr. T was in?
I believe Rocky IV.
Okay.
Don't ask me.
Yeah, so, I believe Rocky IV. Don't quote me on that, though, Kurt.
Whichever one that Mr. T was in, at one point in time in the pre-fight... are you there?
Yeah, we're here, yep.
Okay. In the pre-fight stuff in the movie, they ask Mr. T's character, what was it, Clubber Lang or something like that?
Yeah, Clubber Lang. And that's actually, I'm looking it up now, Rocky III. Yep, James Clubber Lang.
Okay. So they ask him his prediction for the fight. And what was his prediction?
What was it?
Pain.
That's true.
That's my prediction for Iowa, Michigan State. I predict pain for both teams. They're going to try and beat each other up.
Which Rocky was Mr. T in? So if you go back and listen to that interview, or listen to that call from Kirk, he wants to know which Rocky was Mr. T in. He played Clubber Lang. That was in Rocky III, which Apollo Creed was also in because he trained Rocky in that movie. And then in Rocky IV, Apollo Creed, spoiler alert, dies, you know, fighting for charity. Remember the James Brown scene? He dies in that film, and then Rocky goes into this deep depression, and he ends up fighting the Russian who killed Apollo Creed.
Okay,
that was
Al,
Rocky
listen
four.
To this plot line, though. These are not great movies. Come
oh,
on,
stop
after Rocky
it. You
won.
Did not. I will
oh,
not allow
now.
That blasphemy on our airwaves. We are out of time. Yeah, so that's been our whole debate this entire week, whether or not I was wrong concerning which movie, I guess, Apollo Creed died in. But I corrected myself. I corrected myself yesterday, so I got it right. So, yeah, but thanks, Jim from Corona, for having a good ear, because I did get that wrong at the very beginning. But I did say, hey, all right, I screwed up. Apollo Creed died in Rocky IV. All right. All right, enough Rocky talk, okay? Let's dive into a pretty cool story done from our very own Kelly Van Maley, who is a current sports beat reporter. She's been doing a fantastic job along with our other students who work here on the show day in and day out. Her beat is actually covering the MSU dodgeball team, which is actually one of the premier teams across the nation. Who would have thunk it, right? So actually, Kelly, she took a trip out to IM Circle. Now, I actually had a chance to go out there on the shoot with her, and we did a video piece profiling the two captains of this team, Alex Zajac and Colin O'Brien. And Alex and Colin, they gave us a bit of a demonstration on a certain technique that's used within the game. Here's Kelly's report.
I'm Kelly Van Maley here at IM Circle with Colin and Alex from the MSU Club Dodgeball team, and we are going to talk about what is called the grip throwing technique, which they use to make the dodgeball go faster. They're going to kind of talk a little bit about it, kind of show us the technique and show the differences that it can make in the speed of the ball. So first I kind of want to talk about what are the benefits of using the grip throwing technique.
Well, for one, it really improves the speed of the ball on your throw. So without it, we could probably throw around 45 miles an hour. With it, I throw around 60 to 65, and then some of the top throwers in the league can hit 70, even a little bit higher, 75. So right there, the speed's a big thing. And then two, it puts curve on the ball. So it's either you're going to go curving down or curving left, depending on your arm angle. So those two things, the added speed and the added curve, are a big help.
Now, Alex, does everybody on the team use this, or do some people know how to do it and some people not know?
We definitely advocate for it. A lot of people do grip throw. That's definitely the most popular throwing technique in the league, just because of all the benefits. We do have a few people who don't quite know how to grip throw yet, but they do know how to use their throwing technique to their advantage.
And when did you guys first learn how to do it?
My first practice, I saw it, and I asked a veteran guy to teach me how, and so I started from there. Quickly kind of got the hang of it, and yeah, it's from there, I've been throwing it ever since.
So I'm just going to grab it, you're going to fold your fingers under there, perfect.
Okay.
Make sure your thumb's down.
Down.
Perfect, and just throw it, you can throw a baseball or football.
That's good.
That was better. Is it used everywhere, or is it just used in this league?
I would say it's prevalent in every team, especially with new teams, we try to have some other veteran teams help them out, and if they don't know it yet, we teach them right away, because it's really the only way to stay competitive in the league is to have several throwers who grip throw.
I'm Kelly Van Maley at I Am Circle for WKAR Current Sports.
Yeah, very cool stuff. Kelly did one outstanding job with that story. So, again, that story will be actually be posted very, very soon on WKAR.org. Keep a lookout on it because you can hear, you know, what they're describing, but it's different than seeing it. So it's kind of hard to describe, but it's a very cool technique that I didn't even know dodgeball players use when in competition. To be honest, I don't even know much about dodgeball competition, period. But very cool stuff, and I want to give mad props to Kelly Van Mail for bringing that story to us. A story that, again, you won't see in your normal newspaper or television show, okay? So don't miss that. All right, let's hit our second break. When we come back, we will give you a preview of the big game. Michigan State and Iowa, the Big Ten Championship, folks. We'll also have Throwback Thursday on tap, as well as take your calls. Call in 517-355-9527. You are listening to Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870. All right, welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. Just under 20 minutes left here on the show. And you know what? We do have tickets to give away today. Of course, we mentioned how the Michigan State men's basketball team, they took on Louisville last night at the Brez in the Big Ten ACC Challenge. Michigan State getting the win in that matchup. And now it's the women's turn. That's right, the MSU women's basketball team, they will take on Louisville tonight at 7 p.m., that game can be seen on ESPN2. But, hey, if you want to check out that game in person, you know what? We have two tickets to give away, less than 20 minutes left to go in the show. If you want to win these tickets, you know that we make you earn them here on Current Sports. And we do that by throwing out a trivia question. Now, of course, early this week, I want to give mad props to James, who was the winner of the Michigan State men's basketball tickets, and he got a chance to check out that game last night against Louisville. So if you want to win tickets for the MSU women's basketball game against Louisville tonight, here is your trivia question, and a pretty simple one. I think this is an easy one. Can you name the four Spartans who earned all Big Ten offense this week? If you can give us those four names, hey, the tickets are yours. Again, call in, give us the four names of the Spartans who were named to the Big Ten offense team. Again, if you call in, you'll win tickets to check out the MSU women's basketball team tonight against Louisville. And again, I'm talking about MSU football here. Name the four Spartans to earn all Big Ten offense. Call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. And speaking of the big game, of course, we are previewing this big game today, because tomorrow we will actually be rolling in a best of Current Sports special, seeing as though I will be out of town in Indianapolis, Indiana, providing you with coverage leading up to the Big Ten Championship game as the Spartans take on the Iowa Hawkeyes at 8:17 p.m. at Lucas Oil Stadium out in Indy. So today, let's preview it. Michigan State, Iowa. Big, big game with a lot of implications. We all know that the winner of this game with Iowa, you know, with the College Football Committee, you know, in their latest rankings this week on Tuesday night, putting Michigan State at the number 5 spot, just on the outside looking into the playoff, and putting Iowa at the number 4 spot, and both of those teams playing in the Big Ten Championship game this weekend, it is the de facto, you know, way in for either one of these teams who will win to participate in the College Football Playoff. Whoever wins will play in the College Football Playoff. That's hard not to fathom, okay? Big game. Now for me, there's a lot of areas that I will be honing in and paying attention to. Aaron Burbridge versus Desmond King. Again, the Big Ten's top receiver will be matched up with the conference's top corner for much of the night. Iowa will be banking on Spartans QB, Connor Cook, to look elsewhere for a big play. If King is able to neutralize Burbridge in any way, shape, or form, that is going to be a big win for the Iowa Hawkeyes. The thing is, Michigan State has other receivers that can make big plays down the field as well, and have done so pretty consistently other than Aaron Burbridge. I mean, guys like McGarrett Kings Jr., who has emerged late here in the year. Also, R.J. Shelton has looked good. But if King can win that matchup, and if Michigan State can establish, establish Burbridge as a threat early on, it would open the rest of the offense against an Iowa defense that is much better at stopping the run than the pass. So that's matchup number one. What are you looking at to start this conversation off, Isaac?
Well, to lead off of that topic, I think equally as important for Iowa is to try to neutralize McGarrett Kings, because last time these two teams played, it was October of 2013, a 26-14 win for the Spartans. Jake Rudock actually started for the Iowa Hawkeyes, fun fact. But McGarrett Kings had a breakout game, 5 receptions, 94 yards, and a touchdown. If Michigan State can establish any sort of consistency with either Kings or Burbridge, I think Iowa could be in for a long day. But the other matchup I want to see is, we'll go Big Ten, all Big Ten defense here, not to give away any answers, but that Michigan State defensive line with, of course, Malik McDowell and Shalik Calhoun, who's got a career-high 8.5 sacks this year. I think we could see a very good matchup, a grinded-out type game between Jordan Canzari, the Iowa running back, who's closing in on 1,000 yards for the season, and that Michigan State front four. I think it should be really an interesting matchup, because the other thing about Iowa you have to remember is they are an offensive lineman factory. They just produce them and churn them out right into the NFL. So I think that front four versus the Iowa offensive five, I think that'll be a big matchup, and we'll see how many yards Canzari can pick up.
Yeah, that's my next point. I mean, can Iowa establish the run game? Because if they can, I mean, Michigan State right now, their defense is giving up fewer than 100 yards per game on the ground. If Iowa gets its running game rolling, I think it will open up play action for quarterback C.J. Beathard against that Spartan secondary that has been suspect at times. Even though I think that the secondary has gotten better and they are clicking to a degree right now late in the year, which is when you want your secondary or your team to click, period, I do believe there may be a few holes that C.J. can pinpoint if the Spartans are also looking for Iowa to burn them on the ground as well. Beathard can also do damage with his legs. We've seen many times this season C.J. able to make some big plays happen, especially on third and shorts, that Michigan State also have to pay attention to. Either way, the Hawkeyes are comfortable with the ball in Beathard's hands. He is a guy who doesn't make many mistakes. He is a guy who is going to challenge you in many areas of the field. And he hasn't turned it over since October 17th, which is a span of 5 games. So CJ is most likely going to make good decisions out there on the football field. It's up to the Michigan State defense to force him into sporadic decisions, which could possibly lead to turnovers. Also, I want to go to the big conversation that we've had concerning Michigan State and where they need to improve on throughout the season, and special teams, folks. Each team won at least 5 games by 1 score or less. That's an interesting fact for you. Again, both Michigan State and Iowa has won at least 5 games by one score or less in tight situations. And I always say, in those crunch times, when you have to, you know, make a play, it's the little things that matter. You can't have penalties. You know, you can't turn the ball over. You know, things like that can cost you the game in tight situations. And I expect this one to be a very tight game. Now, Iowa needed a 57-yard field goal as time expired to beat Pitt. Michigan State needed to return a botched punt to the end zone to beat Michigan. Neither team is playing for, a Big Ten or national title without both luck and solid execution on special teams. Even though, and it's so ironic because Michigan State beats OSU on Michael Geiger's foot. They beat Michigan, probably the two sexiest wins all year for Michigan State. But they beat Michigan on, of course, the Jalen Watts-Jackson return after a muffed punt attempt by, you know, Blake O'Neal. But the way these teams play, a blowout win is not likely in the cards for either team. It is very possible that the final margin of victory, in my estimation, is the result of a huge special teams play. Possibly. I'm just saying. You can tell I'm really open for a crazy game this Saturday, right? But whether it be a long field goal, kick return, or a botch kick, at the end of the day, whoever comes out with the dub this weekend is going to have to execute on special teams. Point blank, period.
And this kid for Iowa, their kicker, Marshall Cohn, has been outstanding throughout the year. I mean, forget keeping them away from the 30 or the 25 in crunch time. He had a 57-yarder against Pitt. This kid has got a leg. He's going to the NFL for sure. So I agree with you. I think special teams, again, could be a difference. Of course, we've seen Michigan State play better there recently. Of course, not without the occasional exception, a.k.a. a missed extra point from Michael Geiger or something along those lines. But I think also going back to the turnover battle, both of these teams are some of the best in the nation when it comes to controlling the ball. C.J. Beathard, almost a 5-1 touchdown to interception ratio. Connor Cook betters that even with a 6-1, 24-4 season. So I think the turnover battle, both teams are plus 14 on the year. If either can make some big plays, get defensive touchdown, anything like that, that'll totally shape and shift the course of this game. Otherwise, I think it'll be, just like you, a really close battle. I think it'll be in the trenches, an absolute war. I think both of these offensive and defensive lines will be going at each other. Talk about all Big Ten. I'll give you a hint. Michigan State's got a few on the offensive line, and so does Iowa. You know, they're vicious as well. So, I think we'll see a great battle between these two teams.
Yeah, and I, you know, going back to turnovers, the Spartans can't turn the ball over against Iowa. Point blank, period. I mean, it's no accident that Iowa leads the Big Ten in interceptions and is tied for third in the nation in points scored off them. That can't happen. I mean, so basically, when you're looking at the stats here, if Iowa is able to get a turnover in Michigan State, it's most likely that they're taking it to the house and possibly scoring on the ensuing possession or maybe on that same play. Connor Cook has to be Connor Cook. And, again, the health of his arm, again, you know, I'll go back to the quote that he said after the win this past weekend. He talked about how he believes that his arm, you know, is going to be night and day, even though they were able to just completely romp on Penn State at home to end the year. Connor Cook believed that his arm is going to be healthier than it was against Penn State and is going to be night and day comparing the Penn State game to the Big Ten championship game against Iowa this Saturday. At the end of the day, I am going to choose the Spartans to top the Iowa Hawkeyes. I'm going 31-27 Michigan State.
Yeah, I think it'll be a great game. The other part I'm interested in is the coaching matchup, of course, Kirk Ferentz with the 4-3 all-time lead against Mark D'Antonio. But I think this game will also be very close. I wouldn't let the Nebraska score lines deceive you. Of course, Iowa won that last week 28-20, but that was a close game. That was really a tight matchup between the two. Michigan State lost that one on a little bit of a fluke Brandon Riley catch. So I'm picking 35-27 MSU. At the end of the day, I just think the indoor conditions will favor Connor Cook. We'll have a big game from him, and I don't think Iowa's offense can necessarily keep up.
Some also a few interesting tidbits about the history of this matchup. The largest margin of victory for the Spartans against the Ohio Hawkeyes is back in 1966, a 56-7 victory. The longest winning streak for the Spartans during any time period between the Hawkeyes is actually three straight from 1973 to 1975. On the flip side of that, the largest margin of victory for Iowa is a 41-0 beatdown of Michigan State back in 1980, and the longest winning streak is actually five for the Hawkeyes. The Hawkeyes beat the Spartans five straight times from the time period of 1979 to 1983. All right, folks, well, to close out the show, it is Thursday, and each and every Thursday here on WKAR's Current Sports, we like to take a look at the history of sports and hop into our current sports time machine and look at exactly what happened on this Thursday, December 3rd.
But the Detroit Pistons have just shocked the Los Angeles Lakers.
Wing, there's a drive to left. That one is long.
Eisenman back over his step. Into the slot for Brown. Shoots. Yes. Good. And there it goes. You never know when to expect it. Darren McCarty said before.
All right, folks. Well, what exactly happened on this particular date in sports history? Well, in 1929, the Boston Bruins began a 14-game winning streak. In 1950, Tom Fears of the Los Angeles Rams, he caught an NFL record 18 passes against the Green Bay Packers. Terrell Owens of the San Francisco 49ers broke the record with 20 catches for over 283 yards and a touchdown against the Bears on December 17th. 2000. Pretty cool tidbit there also with the Packers twist, with the Lions playing the Packers tonight. 1961, George Blanda of the Houston Oilers. He kicked a 55-yard field goal in 1968. The Rules Committee of Major League Baseball announced that in 1969, the pitcher's mound will be lowered from 15 to 10 inches. This was done in order to get more batting action. The strike zone was also reduced from the knees to the shoulders, to the top of the knees, to the armpits. Interesting. All right, 1988, kind of a Lions twist here. Barry Sanders of Oklahoma State University won the Heisman Trophy. Barry, who I believe to be the greatest running back of all time. You can make an argument for Jim Brown as well, but Barry Sanders, man oh man, was it fun to watch him play or what? In 1991, Hulk Hogan, he won his fourth WWF championship when he defeated The Undertaker. And in 1994, Greg LeMond, he announced that he was retiring. He was a three-time winner of the Tour de France. So there you have that. Throwback Thursday. Probably my favorite moment there has to be back in 88 and 91. Barry Sanders winning the Heisman Trophy. And in 1991, Hulk Hogan winning his fourth WWF championship when he defeated The Undertaker. I used to be a huge, huge, like ridiculously fanatic wrestling fan. So, yeah, Hulk Hogan, one of the greatest to ever do it. All right, folks, well, we unfortunately are out of time. We won't see you back again live until Monday. Again, I will be hitting the road to Indianapolis, Indiana to provide you with coverage from the Big Ten Championship game between the Michigan State Spartans and the Iowa Hawkeyes. Again, 8:17 p.m. kickoff. Man, Gus Johnson to be on the call for Fox on that game. That's going to be very entertaining, right? Right? Oh, boy. Oh, okay, so if you want to watch our coverage from what we'll be doing out in Indy, just simply keep it locked to WKAR.org and follow me on Twitter at AlMartinWKAR as I will be tweeting out the links to our coverage. Again, folks, a special thanks to all of you who have listened throughout the week here on the show. You have been listening to Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. I'm Al Martin. Be easy, people.